Chapter 33. H. Who has been her publisher?
C. I don't know.
H. She has one, I suppose?
C. I think not.
H. Ah. You think this is her first book?
C. Yes, I suppose so. I think so.
H. What is it about? What is the character of it?
C. I believe I do not know.
H. Have you seen it?
C. Well, no, I haven't.
H.I.H. How long have you known her?
C. I don't know her.
H. Don't know her?
C. No.
H.I.H. How did you come to be interested in her book, then?
C. Well, she wrote and asked me to find a publisher for her, and mentioned you.
H. Why should she apply to you instead of me?
C. She wished me to use my influence.
H. Dear me, what has influence to do with such a matter?
C. Well, I think she thought you would be more likely to examine her book, if you were influenced.
H. Why, what we are here for is to examine books, anybody's book that comes along. It's our business. Why should we turn away a book unexamined, because it's a stranger's?
It would be foolish.
No publisher does it.
On what ground did she request your influence? Since you do not know her,
she must have thought you knew her literature, and could speak for it.
Is that it?
C. No, she knew I didn't.
H. Well, what then?
S. He had a reason of some sort for believing you competent to recommend her literature, and also under obligations to do it?
C. Yes, I knew her uncle.
H. Knew her uncle?
C. Yes.
H. Upon my word.
So, you knew her uncle.
Her uncle knows her literature. He endorses it to you. The chain is complete. Nothing further needed. You are satisfied. And therefore,
see, no, that isn't all. There are other ties.
I know the cabin her uncle lived in the mines. I knew his partners too. Also, I came near knowing her husband, before she married him, and I did know the abandoned shaft, where a premature blast went off, and he went flying through the air, and clear down to the trail, and hit an Indian in the back with almost fatal consequences.
H. To him, or to the Indian?
C. She didn't say which it was.
H. With a sigh, it certainly beats the band.
You don't know her, you don't know her literature, you don't know who got hurt when the blast went off, you don't know a single thing for us to build an estimate of her book upon.
So far as I see, I knew her uncle.
You are forgetting her uncle.
H.O., what use is he?
Did you know him long?
How long was it?
See, well, I don't know that I really knew him, but I must have met him, anyway.
I think it was that way.
You can't tell about these things, you know, except when they are recent.
H. Recent?
When was all this?
C. 16 years ago.
H. What a basis to judge a book upon.
At first you said you knew him, and now you don't know whether you did or not.
C. Oh yes, I know him. Anyway, I think I thought I did.
I'm perfectly certain of it.
H. What makes you think you thought you knew him?
C. Why, she says I did, herself.
H. She says so.
C. Yes, she does, and I did know him too, though I don't remember it now.
H. Come, how can you know it, when you don't remember it?
C. I don't know.
That is, I don't know the process, but I do know lots of things that I don't remember, and remember lots of things that I don't know.
It's so with every educated person.
H. After a pause, is your time valuable?
C. No, well, not very.
H. Minus.
So I came away then, because he was looking tired.
Overwork, I reckon. I never do that. I have seen the evil effects of it.
My mother was always afraid I would overwork myself, but I never did.
Dear madam, you see how it would happen if I went there.
He would ask me those questions, and I would try to answer them to suit him, and he would hunt me here and there and yonder, and get me embarrassed more and more all the time, and at last he would look tired on account of overwork, and there it would end and nothing done.
I wish I could be useful to you, but, you see, they do not care for uncles or any of those things.
It doesn't move them. It doesn't have the least effect. They don't care for anything but the literature itself, and they as good as despise influence. But they do care for books, and are eager to get them and examine them, no matter whence they come, nor from whose pen. If he will send yours to a publisher, any publisher, he will certainly examine it, I can assure you of that. A telephonic conversation. Consider that a conversation by telephone, when you are simply citing by, and not taking any part in that conversation, is one of the solemnest curiosities of modern life. Yesterday I was writing a deep article on a sublime philosophical subject, while such a conversation was going on in the room. I noticed that one can always write best when somebody is talking through a telephone close by. Well, the thing began in this way. A member of our household came in and asked me to have our house put into communication with Mr. Bagley's downtown. I have observed, in many cities, that the sex always shrink from calling up the central office themselves. I don't know why, but they do. So I touched the bell, and this talk ensued. Central office. Gruffy. Hello. I. Is it the central office? CO. Of course it is. What do you want? I. Will you switch me on to the Bagleys, please? CO. All right. Just keep your ear to the telephone. Then I heard K look, cluck, 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 look, look. Then a horrible gritting of teeth, and finally a piping female voice. Why, yes? Rising inflection. Did you wish to speak to me? Without answering, I handed the telephone to the applicant, and sat down. Then followed that queerest of all the queer things in this world, a conversation with only one end of it. You hear questions asked. You don't hear the answer. You hear invitations given. You hear no thanks in return. You have listening pauses of dead silence, followed by apparently irrelevant and unjustifiable exclamations of glad surprise or sorrow or dismay. You can't make head or tail of the talk, because you never hear anything that the person at the other end of the wire says. Well, I heard the following remarkable series of observations, all from the one tongue, and all shouted, for you can't ever persuade the sex to speak gently into a telephone. Yes? Why, how did that happen? Pause. What did you say? Pause. Oh no, I don't think it was. Pause. No. Oh no, I didn't mean that. I meant, put it in, while it is still boiling or just before it comes to a boil. Pause. What? Pause. I turned it over with a backstitch on the selvage edge. Pause. Yes, I like that way too, but I think it's better to baste it on with Valenciennes or Bombazin, or something of that sort. It gives it such an air and attracts so much noise. Pause. It's 49th Deuteronomy, 64th to 97th inclusive. I think we ought all to read it often. Pause. Perhaps so. I generally use a hairpin. Pause. What did you say? Aside. Children, do be quiet. Pause, oh. B flat. Dear me, I thought you said it was the cat. Pause. Since when? Pause. Why, I never heard of it. Pause. You astound me. It seems utterly impossible. Pause. Who did? Pause. Goodness gracious. Pause. Well, what is this world coming to? Was it right in church? Pause. And was her mother there? Pause. Why, Mrs. Bagley, I should have died of humiliation. What did they do? Long pause. I can't be perfectly sure, because I haven't the notes by me, but I think it goes something like this. Tiroli lol lol, lol loli lol lol, otoli lol lol li 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 I do. And then repeat, you know. Pause. Yes, I think it is very sweet and very solemn and impressive, if you get the andantino and the pianissimo right. Pause. Oh, gumdrops, gumdrops. But I never allow them to eat striped candy. And of course they can't, till they get their teeth, anyway. Pause. What? Pause. Oh, not in the least. Go right on. He's here writing. It doesn't bother him. Pause. Very well. I'll come if I can. Aside. Dear me, how it does tire a person's arm to hold this thing up so long. I wish he'd pause. Oh no, not at all. I like to talk, but I'm afraid I'm keeping you from your affairs. Pause. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.